find Jesus Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from the Mercy Live Up Studio in beautiful, not downtown Des Moines, Des Moines, Iowa. 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And thanks to Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can hear us on our Iowa Catholic Radio app, darn tootin' near anywhere. So, Bud, how are you doing today? Deacon Tony's getting me, thank you, Deacon, he's getting me Kleenexes because I have the sniffles.
I'm doing pretty well. Actually, I was going to say this is my first time in the studio in probably 5 months where I don't feel like I'm hacking up a lung.
Right, so you gave it to me.
knock on wood.
Yeah.
But is this officially the dog days of summer? What are the dog days of summer?
Well, I actually think the dork in me thinks it has something to do with, it's astronomy. It's something about the dog star. But the bad part of me goes, like, when it looks like dogs are about to die from heat. But it has not been hot, dude.
No, it hasn't. It's nice, but
yeah, the state fair is coming up. That's why it's the dog days of stuff.
Well, when I was young, this was always kind of a...
When I was young.
This is sort of a bittersweet time of year because it feels like summer's sort of stretching endlessly. But as a child, you know, like, the school year is right around the corner. I feel bad for kids these days, the youngins these days. I saw some kids in the neighborhood with backpacks on.
I know.
Walking to school this morning.
I'm like, have my windows down, like yelling at him, like, hey, nerds, going to school. I'm an adult. And then I'm all like, oh, I have to go to work every day. Dang it. The kid won again.
Did I ever tell you, when we first moved to St. Louis, we moved into a neighborhood with, I think it was Hasidic Jews, very Orthodox Jews, and one of their holidays, Rosh Hashanah, I'm really messing this up, Their kids dress up like it's Halloween.
Oh.
And I woke up and stepped outside, and it was, I think it was early September, and there's kids walking through the neighborhood with their costumes on, and I thought I had slept for 2 months. It was frightening.
That is awesome.
What's the old tale about the, I don't know.
Guy who Ichabod sleeps? Crane.
Yeah, something like that.
No, that is fantastic. I did not know that. What I was going to say is just, I can't believe how nice it was. We actually went out as a family and tried to do our best impression of the Von Trapps. We went out to Ewing Park and we were running on that hill and my kids were singing about goat herdsmen or something.
Yeah, like I was eavesdropping on a conversation with you yesterday and it sounds like you're pretty impressed with Des Moines public parks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. As much as I love Oklahoma and even living in Kansas, Des Moines park system basically destroys everyone else's.
What was the one you were telling me about? Fort
Des Moines.
And they've got really old trees.
Down south, yeah. They have an arboretum with, like, I think the oldest oak trees in Iowa. South Side! South Side has the best parks, people. The more you know. Okay, well, as always, we're underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences. We have, speaking of the state fair, Deacon Tony, one of the great things about the state fair this year is Mercy College is going to be there all week. We're going to be in the Varied Industries building in the air conditioning, so thank the Lord. But if it keeps up being like 80 degrees, it won't matter. We also have our big day on August 15th. It's our Red Ribbon Day, so we're going to be on the Grand Avenue outside the grandstand, buy all of the good food. So we're really hoping that people join us at the fair. That's the sort of slogan, join us at the fair. And we hope a lot of people get to swing by and find out about your downtown Catholic college, forming medical students in the Heritage of the Sisters of Mercy.
I think I've mentioned this on the show before, Bo, but I know you're a big fair guy, Iowa State fair guy, and so it's kind of nice, I think, with both Iowa Catholic Radio and Mercy College, you get the opportunity to go down there and represent.
Right, I'm going to try to just sleep over at the fair. I don't know if that's safe, to be honest.
But what's the most heart attack-inducing food you've had at the fair?
Me? Well, you know, I just usually go for meat, but like anytime there's any like the deep-fried whatever... I mean, I like fried fruit, but fairs will go nuts on this one. Also, as always, brought to you by Cartridge World.
We want to give thanks to Cartridge World for supporting The Uncommon Good. Whether you're a business, a home office, a college student, or a busy mom trying to find affordable ink and tuner cartridges, Cartridge World has what you need. They're online at cartridgeworld.com. I also forgot the address there, Bo.
Oh, yeah, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and like we said, online on CartridgeWorld.com.
For business customers, pickup and delivery are available.
Thank you, Cartridge World, for our printing needs. We're going to have Laura Winman on. We're trying to get a hold of her right now. but we'll go to a break here for a few minutes. And when we get back, we will have Laura Winman on. We'll talk about Catholic healthcare and how that has to do with the common good. So stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher.
Programming support for Catholic Women Now is provided by Iowa's injury attorney, Fred Haas. For over 30 years, Fred Haas has helped injured Iowans recover financial, physical, and emotional losses from car, truck, and motorcycle accidents, work-related injuries, and injuries due to negligence. Most importantly, providing the professional, personal, and responsive legal counsel that everyone deserves. Fred, double D, Haas, double A, the Des Moines Law Offices of Fred Haas. While we have time, let us do good.
Bud, who doesn't like a good story?
Only heartless people, Bo.
Exactly. What if I told you there was a story, let's say a movie,
okay,
and it had fascinating origin stories, epic battle scenes, and powerful arcs of loss and redemption? Wouldn't you want to see that movie?
Of course. It sounds better than most movies these days.
What if I told you it was all true?
I would definitely watch.
Well, friends, the story is the story of the Holy Scriptures, and here at Iowa Catholic Radio, we want you to reclaim the depth of not only the greatest story, but your story as well.
You can hear Read the Bible in a Year every day at 5 a.m. with Gene Wells and Jim Lyons. Friends, you don't want to miss it.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio's broadcast of Dowling Catholic Sports and Activities is provided by Kemin, using science to improve the world.
Kemin is on the leading edge of molecular science, manufacturing more than 500 specialty ingredients used by the feed and food industries and the health, nutrition, and beauty markets.
Kemin's vision is to improve the quality of life by touching half the people of the world every day with their products and services.
Kemin, using science to improve the world. Online at Kemin.com.
We're back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We're in a little bit of technical difficulties getting a hold of Laura Winman, Chief Mission Officer, at Mercy Medical Center in downtown Des Moines. But until then, Bud and we've been known to be able to talk to each other. I've heard this, Bud.
Is this true?
Yeah. Like we said, beautiful week in Des Moines. I'm a little worried that will make the Des Moines fair like 100 degrees every day. But like you said, we're knocking on a lot of wood today that it will be perfectly fine. We actually had the privilege to have Laura in class, bioethics, a few weeks ago. And I think that it's always nice for when we have the occasion to have students talk about bioethics, to talk to people who actually have lived experience of dealing with some of these issues. Between Laura Winman and Deacon Dave O'Brien, who is the head director of pastoral care,
yeah,
right?
Head chaplain at the hospital there.
So that it's nice to have students get to go over into the hospital and actually hear people who have personal experience about what it's like to deal with these issues on the ground and not leave them so abstract.
Yeah, so well, we've tried to emphasize this on the show in the past, but when thinking about healthcare, you know, this is, for me, Bo, this isn't something tangential to the mission of the church. So you've pointed out in class before that really what we think of as hospitals, that's rooted in ministries that flowed out of monasteries during the early, throughout the Middle Ages, really. And so this is a continuation of our calling to follow Jesus Christ, to follow his example. We saw that a central part of his ministry in Scripture is the healing of those with various kinds of ailments. And Christians of all stripes who picked up that call have always saw it as part and parcel of the life of faith to care for those who are weakest, who are sick, who are dying.
So, of course, the word hospital comes hospitality and things like this. It starts to be one of those interesting things that we ask students. Very basically, what do we mean when we talk about being hospitable, and what does that mean, taking people into one's house? There's a way in which we domesticate all sorts of stuff. I was listening, by the way, before the show started, and Chris Stefanik, he's stolen our bit about domestication. So, like, you know, we always talk about, like, don't domesticate the church or God.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was... Just because he's, like, better looking than us doesn't mean that's... What's Chris Stefanik's deal, right? Anyway, we domesticate a lot of these words. I think hospitality is one of them.
Yeah.
That it we kind of mean it like, oh, you know, if someone rings the doorbell, I guess you don't throw a rock at them immediately. But, you know, radical hospitality, we hear words like that thrown around with adjectives. It's one of those deals where if we start to think about what it meant to see Christ in the sick and yeah. the worst off, what sort of ramifications do we have? If you do that, medicine becomes a quite different thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have all sorts of debates about it. Clearly, it's always in the news. We just had Dr. Jeffrey Bishop on not too long ago talking about that in regards to end of life. But when you start to think about what can a community do as a mission field? We often think of mission and charity as individuals doing things. But is it possible to actually think about entire communities having a mission field? And if you do that, you can begin to ask, mm-hmm. what does it mean to support something like a hospital? Precisely not because you and I might use it one day or will, but for the people who couldn't have any other options otherwise.
Well, you and I had the great privilege this past weekend to speaking with the board from Iowans for Life. And... At the end of the conversation, one of the questions had to do with how do we kind of, I forget how it was phrased exactly, how do we make a difference in our culture given the fact that so many people are coming from such a different place and we don't seem to have common ground to appeal to? And I began to think, you know, sometimes we start with the big crises. I think of the Charlie Gard case or even about the abortion issue. I mean, we pray for and we want, you know, Roe v. Wade to be overturned and for there to be an end to abortion. But that's kind of, in some ways, that's like starting with the boulder. And what I mean by that is to begin to have conversations with those who are maybe outside of the church, I think you do have to have lives of witness. And I'm in no way saying that those involved in the pro-life movement do not. But I think the Catholic hospitals are one of the ways that we witness to the world about the intrinsic dignity of each human life. You know, for a lot of cases during the early stages of healthcare, there wasn't necessarily a lot of hope to sort of, so to speak, save the people who came to hospices and things like that. But the idea was that, first of all, that each person had was sacred, had intrinsic dignity. But secondly, like you're talking about, Bo, that this was an opportunity to meet Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus said, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. And that's really that hospitality that we're talking about. That's a concrete witness to the intrinsic dignity of every human life. And then that starts to ripple out and make an impact, even in the conversations about euthanasia, abortion, other instantiations of the culture of death.
Yeah, I think about that, you know, about what healthcare used to be, and actually a lot of the problems we have is that we're so good at it. If you're like at a Benedictine monastery, it's 8:50, he's like, we're gonna cut your chest open, work on your heart. Yeah. They'd be like, no thank you.
Yeah.
Just let me sit here in bed. So I actually think though that as much as that's a joke, that goes to show you something that I think is very valuable that our students learn by interacting with people over at the medical center. Our technology really does present just as many issues mm-hmm. as it solves. It's quote-unquote a good problem to have, right? It's nice to know that we can actually open someone up and do something about an interior problem. But then it also adds problems because we can put people on ventilators, but then there comes the subsequent question, when do we take people off and things like this? It's really nice because people, especially students, I think have this idea that the Catholic Church and something like the ethical religious directives have like this checkbook of easy answers to everything, that like we're saying that healthcare is very simple. And when they get to talk to people like Deacon Dave or Laura, they get to see that no, ethics consults are very difficult and that there each case has individual qualities about it that don't submit it to some sort of like easy roll off the tongue answers. And I don't know, this has been kind of a theme I've been running up against in a lot of what we're looking about in terms of the faith. I just posted on Facebook yesterday, people will act like scripture has all these really easy pat answers to everything. But there was a psalm and then a part of a book of Job. Both of them start off, what is man? Like speaking to God, like, and you guys might know the psalms, like, what is man that you should think so highly of him? Mm-hmm. And he's a little under the angels and the glory and everything. And then Job says, what is man that you constantly think of him and bother him and try him all the time? So actually scripture is very complicated and wants to admit that our lived experience is actually difficult and speaks of very different voices. I think you see this all over the place with the Catholic Church, that people will act like you guys just want a really simplistic life and easy answers to everything. But I actually think the way students see when they go over and talk with folks over at Mercy Med is, no, we're willing to like open our hearts to the difficulties of life,
yeah,
and live through all this knowing that maybe the answers are past my capacities, and that's why we have to do it together.
Well, Bo, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that in these conversations, there's kind of two dangers, two pitfalls at different extremes. And one is the throwaway culture that Pope Francis talks about, that we would discard a life because we consider it low quality or, beneath a standard of living. The second would be a kind of vitalism. And what I mean by that is that we see life as this kind of supreme value that must be preserved at all cost. One thing that stood out to me about Jeffrey Bishop's conversation is, regardless of where we fall on that spectrum, it's really difficult in our day and age to escape, death driving the conversation, a fear of death, a staving off of death. And so one thing that struck me when you first started teaching at Mercy College is you would step in the classroom and tell a group of nursing students, like, the success rate of hospitals is zero,
right?
Meaning no one leaves this world alive. And that changes the conversation. It changes the conversation about compassion. That can sound very pessimistic and dark, but a realization that, look, we're not miracle workers. God can work miracles, but we're not able on our own power to preserve a life forever. Now, we heal as much as we can. We provide compassionate care in those contexts, but our goal isn't just to, that almost seems like the temptation in the Garden of Eden, to grab a hold of a fruit that God has sort of like put out of our reach.
No, I think that's great. And speaking of that, technological issues, is sometimes we have them at the studio, and then we have miracle workers named Jeb and Tony that figure things out. And so, if I'm not mistaken, Laura's on the phone, right? Laura, are you there?
I am. I'm so sorry for the confusion.
Oh, no problem. It's great to have you on. Like I said, Laura Winman, Chief Mission Officer, Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines, Iowa. We're glad to have you on. We tried not to spoil too much of the fun that we can have today talking. So,
well, it's my pleasure to be with you both.
Yeah, so we did talk a little bit about the history of hospitality, hospitals coming from hospitality that the monks and nuns showed during the Middle Ages, and then maybe talking about some of the issues we talked about having you guys, you get to come and speak to our students in class in bioethics and things like this. In general, we want to talk about healthcare, Catholic healthcare as a ministry and the difference that makes, especially when people think of, we talk so much about healthcare in terms of ledger books and economics of the whole thing. For you, what called you into this central role that you play where healthcare is undeniably a ministry and a calling?
Well, that's a very good question, Bo, and oftentimes you follow this a path that you don't anticipate, but certainly it's a path that's been carved for you. And I've worked in healthcare my entire professional life, and not always in this type of role, but about 12 years ago, after coming to Mercy from working in secular healthcare for many years, I was approached by my predecessor, a lovely woman by the name of Annette Baer, who asked if I might be interested in considering some additional education that would prepare me to be the mission leader at Mercy. I was blessed. I was educated by the Sisters of Mercy, and I had this long history seeped in their tradition, and so it was a natural fit for me. So I had an opportunity to go back to school, get some additional education in the field of ethics and hospital administration so that I knew both the business side and the theological side of what we do. And I, as I mentioned, I've been in this role for about 10 years, and I just can't imagine doing anything else.
Laura, thanks for being with us. As Vice President of Mission Integration down there, I know that there's a lot of different roles that you play or projects that you tackle. When you spoke to our students, one thing that stood out to me that's got to be kind of fun is you get the opportunity to tell the story of the medical center. And I know that's a very complex, varied history, but would you be willing to give our listeners just like a brief overview,
sure,
of how Mercy Medical Center landed where it did and sort of like the legacy of its place,
sure,
here in Des Moines?
Sure. It's one of my favorite stories. And it begins really with the formation of the Sisters of Mercy in Dublin, Ireland. Catherine McAuley, who many people might recognize that name, was the foundress. She's now the Venerable Catherine McAuley as she's been makes her way towards sainthood. But she was a very independent woman who lived in Dublin in a time where the social ills were very reflective of struggles that we have today. And so there was a great deal of poverty. There were people who were seeking employment. There were people who maybe were victims of domestic violence. And she felt, because of her Catholic upbringing, that she had a responsibility not just to help them, but to empower them to have a fulfilling life and one that met all the gifts that they were given. And so she and a group of women who were similarly called began a house called the House of Mercy. So that may be a familiar name to your listeners because we also have a House of Mercy that's at 15th and Clark. And this was a residential facility where women could really have a safe haven and get their feet underneath them and become self-sustaining. And she, Catherine, believed that education and employment were very important to people's sustenance and made them less vulnerable to the forces outside. And that really began this wonderful, beautiful order of religious women who took as their fourth vow, in addition to the three traditional vows that religious women take, one of service. And so they were really out in the streets with people, kind of smelling like the sheep, as Pope Francis says. And that was the beginning of their ministry, and health care and education were their two particular callings. They came to Des Moines about 125 years ago. We're getting ready to celebrate our 125th anniversary in 2018. And they, their first patients were cared for, ironically, in Hoyt Sherman Place. There was a large flu epidemic when they arrived, and the Sherman family said, take our home. And that was the first place where they cared for patients. And as they did that, they had some very generous benefactors who gave them money to build a hospital, and it was built on the spot where Mercy resides today. So at 6th and University was where they felt was most appropriate, and that first hospital held about 60 patients, and they have always said and committed even to this day that this is our neighborhood and this is where they'll stay. So even though we expand, we will always be a downtown facility to meet the needs of the patients that we serve.
Yeah, I have to say that one of the great things about when I came here and interviewed, I got a chance to meet you and Deacon Dave up on in Mercy Medical, and we look north, and you know, Deacon Dave with his very impressionable way of speaking makes this point forcefully, and then you explain this history to me, and I think anybody coming from the outside into Des Moines and seeing this sort of central hub, this is the center of the city, and in many ways that the rest of the city has grown around. And to see that history deeply interwoven, and that history is deeply interwoven with this idea of caring for others, is a very powerful thing to say about the city of Des Moines. And I know it made a very great impression on me. I think I was in the cards to end up here anyway. You guys have such great food. But I really think that it made it a lot easier to see Mercy College and Mercy Medical here in the center of the city. Like you said, always wanting to be here as a presence, because exactly the heritage that you speak of.
Right. And I think that people who are drawn to healthcare as a vocation, that desire to serve plays out in lots of environments. I have many wonderful friends who work in different healthcare systems, and certainly their call to serve is alive and present. But I think the difference for Mercy is that it's part of who we are, and that we speak all the time, that we are driven as a healing ministry of Jesus Christ to serve other people. And just as our Catholic schools are a ministry and our Catholic Charities is a ministry, we strongly believe that healthcare is a ministry as well. And it's guided by the church. There are positive obligations that we have as a church ministry to live by, and it's truly a sacred privilege for us to be part of the network of the community that we serve.
Laura, I know there at the medical center, you all have a diversity in terms of the employees that you have. It's the same way at the college, where we have students coming from diverse backgrounds. And I think some of the students in our class last week were struck by, you know, with the ethical and religious directives that guide Catholic healthcare, a lot of folks sort of know the more controversial, sort of the hot button issues of those directives. And one thing that you said that I found really refreshing was that, you know, there's those things having to do with contraception or abortion or end of life care or whatever it happens to be. There's also other elements about, like, welcoming anyone who comes to the hospital, whether that's someone who lacks health insurance or someone who's immigrated here to our community. And you were saying to the students, you know, you couldn't throw out just part of the directives, that in a way we're committed to the whole. And so, like, part and parcel of the whole thing is our Catholic moral theology, also this radical commitment to take all people. And I think for the students, that kind of reoriented their perspective about things, that this is really a holistic way of approaching healthcare that has built into it this radical hospitality.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, in an environment where maybe some of what we believe may be perceived as countercultural, or there's social pressures to stray away from what we say we believe, or even financial pressures, and that's very real, and we have to be thinking about how we balance all of these things in the context of our faith. We do rely upon this foundational belief that we as Catholics share, that people have an indisputable value, and that there is no one individual that does not benefit or is not entitled to the compassion that is necessary, especially when they're vulnerable. So you mentioned this beautiful document called the Ethical and Religious Directives. That is a document that we as Catholic healthcare institutions use across the United States. It was a document that has been very helpful for us in guiding the how we execute healthcare in our community. And one of those directives, as you mentioned, does talk about our responsibility to distinguish ourselves as we advocate for people who are particularly vulnerable or more likely to be discriminated against. And that begins with the poor and those who are uninsured, people who are, you know, children and the unborn, single parents, the elderly, racial minorities, refugees, immigrants, and there's this beautiful list of people that says, this is who you are. And so you're absolutely right. I can't split that up. I can't say, well, you know, this is a hot button right now, so I'm going to leave that population off to the side. Mm-hmm. Mercy as an organization says we take them all. It's part of our mission statement. It's part of our commitment. When we hire an employee, we talk to them about who we are before they sign to work here, so that they know what's expected of them and what we're privileged to stand for. And not everybody is cut out for that work, and that's okay. But we talk about that a great deal in the interview process so that they can make sure that this is a good fit for them.
Well, Laura, this is fascinating stuff. We're coming up on our half-hour break. Can you stick around and join us after the break to finish out the hour?
I'd be pleased to do so.
Wonderful. Well, this is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're speaking with Laura Winman, Chief Mission Officer at Mercy Medical Center in downtown Des Moines, Iowa. Stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes with The Uncommon Good.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio's broadcast of Dowling Catholic Sports and Activities is provided by Kemin, using science to improve the world.
Kemin is on the leading edge of molecular science, manufacturing more than 500 specialty ingredients used by the feed and food industries and the health, nutrition, and beauty markets.
Kemin's vision is to improve the quality of life by touching half the people of the world every day with their products and services.
Kemin, using science to improve the world. Online at Kemin.com.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomio saying thank you, Bozen the Florist, for underwriting my show, Catholic Connection, and also for your great support of Iowa Catholic Radio for more than 10 years.
Flowers are a timeless gift. At Bozen the Florist, we believe in providing the best services all over the globe. Hi, this is Tom Bozen, and we've opened a new store in West Des Moines at West Glen Town Center. With Bozen's, you get fresh flowers 24-7 with same-day delivery anywhere in the world or around the corner. No rush, no fuss, 515-244-ROSE or online at Bozen.com.
Established in Des Moines in 1924, St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient by helping to remove roadblocks on their journey out of poverty.
With two thrift stores, a social services department, and an education center, St. Vincent de Paul served over 10,200 clients last year. All of their services are funded by local donations, grants, and sales from their thrift stores.
SVDPDSM.org, 515-282-8327. This message is brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Support for Faith on Trial with Defender of the Faith, Deacon Mike Mano, is provided by
Confluence Brewing Company, brewed locally and featuring regular, seasonal, and limited-release beers available in their tap room and at local stores, bars, and restaurants. Confluence Brewing Company is found at 1235 Thomas Beck Road, off the bike trail south of Graves Lake, and online at confluencebrewing.com.
Confluence Brewing Company is a proud supporter of Faith on Trial and Iowa Catholic Radio.
Back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're speaking with Laura Winman, Chief Mission Officer at Mercy Medical Center in downtown Des Moines, Iowa. Laura, thanks for joining us back at the top of the new, the half hour. Hello, Laura?
Yep, I'm back on.
Okay, good.
I heard this. We're at the top of the hour.
Yeah, no problem. So we've been talking about Catholic health care as a ministry, and especially the difficulty maybe of conceiving of that in when a lot of our public debates about healthcare come down to the idea of cost. You were bringing up the word positive obligations, and on one hand, I think you might be able to throw that out to 80% of Americans, and they would think that's an oxymoron, right? A positive obligation. But for us, that's something that we want to hold with distinction, that we think that there's positive obligations. It's not just simply we have a negative difficulty. There's not disease out there, and I guess we better take care of it because it happens to be there. We feel like this is something that we've been called to do positively, and how that influences what we'll do differently. So do you think when it comes to things like positive obligation, that can make a true difference in why a Catholic hospital organization would make some decision about care that maybe another system wouldn't?
Absolutely. I think if you take to heart, as we do, the call of Catholic healthcare and that the true word of compassion to suffer with people, it means that we do travel journeys with folks that are difficult. And by law, we are obligated to do certain things that are consistent across healthcare, and that may mean evaluating somebody as they come into the emergency room, for example. But the positive obligation that we have as a Catholic ministry is to go that extra step for people, to be thinking about why is this patient coming to us? Do they have the food that they need? Do they have the medicine that they need? Do they have the housing that they need? Because none of these things work in isolation with one another. We're also obligated in a positive way to think about people's spiritual health. So sometimes when we talk about people who are poor, we think about the financial poor. But we also know that there are people with great fiscal resource that struggle from a spiritual perspective. They struggle from a social perspective. And how do we help work with those individuals to offer the help that they need? We have no mandate to force that help on people, but I do believe, again, we have a real privilege to offer it to them. And that's really what we talk a lot about in the formation of our staff. How do we do that in a way, especially when it's challenging or a patient and family might be resistant to what we have to offer?
Laura, kind of piggybacking on Bo's last question, I was curious, how closely do you watch debates about healthcare reform? It seems to me that there's a gap between the way that politicians often talk about healthcare and what Catholic healthcare facilities are committed to. And I'm not really thinking here of like one side of the political divide, but it must just be interesting for you to be, you know, on the front lines each day in a healthcare facility, and then to hear, you know, politicians at a national level try to figure out all the complexities that are involved.
Sure. And it is complex. And I'm not convinced that either party has a perfect solution. And obviously that plays out in all that we read and see. I guess what I would say is my role is to be an advocate, mm-hmm. and to not take a side that is might be deemed conservative or be deemed liberal. But personally, I think about it in terms of my Catholic faith.
Yep.
And what am I, how am I called to help meet the needs of those who are vulnerable? But just like the Sisters of Mercy, how do we help people have tools to improve their own circumstances? So when we have somebody who doesn't have the right medicine, for example, we shouldn't be surprised that they keep showing up in our emergency room. Mm-hmm. Or if they're not eating properly and they're diabetic, it should not be a surprise to us that their blood sugars are out of whack. So our responsibility is to not only help people in an acute situation, but also to be thinking with a visionary perspective about what do we do upstream that helps these people? How are we involved in the schools? How are we helping people with prevention? How are we helping expectant moms so that they don't go into labor preterm? And really be thinking prophetically about improving the health of our community before they enter into the doors of a hospital.
This is Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr, The Uncommon Good. We have Laura Winman, Chief Mission Officer at Mercy Medical Center at Des Moines, Iowa, on the phone. I also want to remind listeners that if they want to text in with any questions, that number is 223-1150. So 223-1150, you text it, and they'll throw it out to us, and we'll see what we can do about getting it answered on air.
So, Deacon Tony's like the Yadier Molina of catching text.
Oh, yeah. Cardinals reference. So, Laura, what you just said was right where I wanted to go next, like you read my mind. A lot of times when the narrative of competing interests in medicine show up, it's because we really do think of medicine in terms of transactions. In Catholic social teaching, this is called communitive justice, this idea that there are some things that if we determine whether they're just or unjust, it's basically a contract. We had a contract. We made a deal. Did you do your end? Did you do mine? The problem with viewing all medicine, or even most of it, as contractual is it really does start to be very individualistic. You have doctors or a hospital. I make a contract with them, et cetera, et cetera. Catholic understanding of medicine at least is distributive, meaning it's a source, a resource that we all have to use together, but there might be a way to even consider it social justice, like that health, the health of a community is something either everyone participates in or no one really truly does. And I think about what you were talking about with preventative medicine. It might be hard to convince the entire nation about doing something like universal payer or one of these big topics that people can have all sorts of opinions. But I think if you start narrowing it down and talking, like you said, in a matter of Catholic social justice, we begin to ask, don't we want to be a nation where mothers make it to term? Like, don't we want to be a nation where when you go through the first year of life, you make weight at that first year of life, you develop like you should? There's ways that we can talk about things like prevention and care at the beginning of life that we really probably could rally more people around than if we find ourselves continually trapped in the transaction sphere of things.
I think that's true. And I think part of the challenge is that we also respect patient autonomy to make decisions, even if there may be a decision that we as a medical institution might say is the wrong one, right? So it's working with individuals for some kind of an internal realization of what it is that they need to do and what's the right time to do it. And what's their responsibility? And there are some people, you know, part of the conversation often leads, you know, in my line of work, at the end of life, do I have to do that? am I morally obligated to take chemotherapy, for example, or continue on dialysis? And that has to be a very important conversation that we must take very seriously.
Well,
because people are not obligated mm-hmm. to do something that, in their own discernment process, they say this is not in my best interest. It's burdensome, or I'm 95 years old, or whatever the case might be.
Well, and one thing that was interesting, both speaking with you and Duke and Dave O'Brien, is there's a way in which you hear things like ethics committees, and I'm sure people have, like, ridiculous late 90s movies in mind, a boardroom, few people, pronouncements, etc. But when both of you started listing off all the people, all the very different people you get involved to talk about ethics consults, I mean, that's everyone from upper chain administration down to the people who are on the floors seeing these patients. There really is a way in which the goal is to hear as many voices as possible, including the patient, the families, the people who are on frontline care, the people who make ultimately the medical decisions, the people who make business decisions. I'm impressed to think about the sheer amount of people involved in trying to talk about these things. Because everyone knows that, you know, you start, what's the rule that if you get enough people in a room, more than two pizzas will feed, that you're just asking for trouble. But it's almost like that the Catholic impulse is to ask for that trouble because it's so important to have a communal discussion about these issues.
I think so. And in a perfect world, we are able to head off an ethics consult by good communication, right? There should be no surprises. We should be having conversation about goals of care with patients and family members all the way along the line so that we are, we don't get to a point where there has to be, you know, a third party evaluation. And that's why it's so important as you think about, your listeners, for them to really search in their own hearts, kind of how do I want my life to play out and who do I want to make decisions on my behalf. And there's a lot of work in the diocese right now in terms of supportive coalitions and helping people make those decisions prospectively rather than waiting until there's an emergency. And I encourage your listeners to watch for that information being distributed through their parishes or on the diocesan website, because it's such an important part of our work. We believe, obviously, that in Catholic healthcare ministry, that death is going to happen, right? And we want it to be a grace-filled death if that's possible. And having those conversations is a real important first step to that work.
Laura, being involved in Catholic higher education, I was struck recently by a study that I read where students from Muslim backgrounds actually reported feeling more comfortable at Catholic colleges than secular universities because there were certain convictions that they have that could be honored in that context, or conversations that they found open at Catholic colleges that they maybe didn't have elsewhere. At a Catholic healthcare facility, especially in a place like Des Moines, you have people coming from all sorts of different backgrounds. Have you found that, you know, families, non-Catholic families, families from different religious backgrounds, that their experience at a place like Mercy is refreshing, or that, you know, there's elements of what we're committed to that I think connect with people from different places?
I would certainly hope so. One of the things that we talk about frequently here is that when you had the Sisters of Mercy who graced our halls and were walking up and down and talking to patients, our Catholic identity, what we stood for, and the sacredness in which we treated the patient healthcare provider relationship was implicit. Mm-hmm. And as they became fewer in number, we were responsible to be more explicit about what we do. And part of that is my working with our new staff and with our new medical staff to talk about what healthcare means and maybe allay any concerns that they have about Catholic healthcare that are inaccurate. And I would agree with you that we have people who say there's just something different about this organization. There's something different about this facility as an employer or as a patient. that resonates with me. And it's not infrequent that I have someone come into my office to visit and I have a beautiful statue of the Blessed Mother, and people of all faiths will comment about that likeness and what that means to them personally, even if Christianity is not their faith tradition. So, you know, we now have, as you know, four sisters who have joined us. They're from Kenya. And the impact that they have on the floors with patients who are Catholic and not Catholic, especially in very difficult, emotionally challenging situations, has just been amazing. And so we know that people take comfort, even people who might not describe themselves as particularly religious in their normal life. If an illness or an injury or an accident occurs, it does have a tendency to cause people to think about their mortality and their previous life and what it is they want their future life to look like.
This is Bo Bonner and Bud Marr with The Uncommon Good. We're speaking with Laura Windman, Chief Mission Officer at Mercy Medical Center in downtown Des Moines. And we're getting ready to wrap up, so if you have any questions, remember to text into 223-1150. Laura, I guess the last thing I want to lead off with, end with, we've talked with nursing students, allied health students, and we've talked with you. We've talked to all sorts of people involved in healthcare. And, you know, one of the things is, you want people that are interested in going into healthcare because it's a nice job. Like, it's a good paycheck, good medical care. I mean, like, I think about my own life being attached to CHI and how that works, it's been very nice helping me provide for my family. But anybody involved in this business knows that it's also difficult's not the right word. Because that could just make it sound like it's hard, like a math problem. But it's something that has to be endured. You deal with pain, you deal with suffering, you deal with death. Just the nature of the work can be strenuous. It can really be something that takes a lot out of you. And yet, some of the most people devoted to what they do are precisely in this field because exactly that sense of calling that you talked about. I guess as we leave off and leave you with the last word. Is there something about the nature of this work that you want the listeners to know about? Because it's one thing to think, I'm going to go and get care, and I hope the bed is soft and that I get healed and stand up as soon as I can and leave. But what is it that you think calls people to this line of work that even though it's difficult and strenuous, they're proud and happy to get to be a part of it?
I would absolutely echo the feeling of pride. It is also challenging, and it can be draining. But I think there is a real reward when you get to the end of your shift, and put your head on the pillow that you have made a difference for someone. And that comes in lots of ways, and there's lots of professions that give you that opportunity. But this one is a pretty tangible one, and it often isn't seen immediately. It comes later. When we receive letters from patients or we encounter people in the hallway or we run into somebody, on the street who says, I was ill and I was in your hospital and I can't tell you what it meant to have that resource there for me. And, that's what kind of fills our buckets. And, we believe that this is our way to contribute and truly to be the hands and feet of Christ. And it's a really good gig. I just can't imagine that I would do anything else.
Well, that's a wonderful way to top that off. Laura, is there anywhere on maybe the Mercy's website or anything that if people have more questions, maybe about advanced directives like you were talking about or anything like that, do you have any resources that you would throw out while we have you for a few more minutes?
Well, our website, which is www.mercydesmoines.org, has a number of these things. It has some information about our history. It has some information about advanced care planning that's there. And it also has an opportunity for people to seek employment. If what they've heard today is something that's been of interest to them, they can look and see if there's a role for them with the skill set that they have.
Well, Laura, it's always an honor to have you on. We always love having you over to speak with the students, and getting to work in league with you is one of the great things about working over at Mercy College as well. So we want to thank you for being on the show with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks to you.
So, Laura Windman, Chief Mission Officer at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines, Iowa. Like you said, you want to go check out those resources. And like you said, if you want to have a job down there, you know, I'm running around there. There's the food court. You'll probably run into me over there. No, but no, wonderful. But one of the things that I think was great about today's show is that we want to talk about the incarnation of Jesus Christ, but we want to talk about what we as a people can do. I like that Laura left off with talking about tangible, right? You can feel that your work is worthwhile. I mean, like, you know, John Leonetti sitting down to a nice grande pumpkin spice latte, and like as the warm pumpkin spice courses through his veins, he feels like he's done a good job on the radio show. But I really do think that what we're mostly seeking is how to make tangible, and that is to say incarnate in the flesh, what we do for Jesus Christ and the church. And the medical outreach of the church, it catches a lot of flack, but precisely because it's so incarnate and that people run into it all the time. And that's precisely where some of the controversies come, is people go like, well, you're the hospital in town. But you almost wish that people could take a step back and think, oh, yeah, the Catholics are the hospital in town. They've been the hospital in town for much of the existence of the United States. And what does that say about trying to make as much as possible Christ's love embodied for people to encounter?
Well, yesterday we were having a really substantive discussion with students about the difficulties of working in the healthcare field. And, Bo, one thing that you said that really stood out to me was that, you know, when you get to the end of your life, 70, 75, whatever it happens to be, even if you get burnt out caring for people in those contexts, you'll look back and say, I'm really grateful for those 7 years or whatever that God called me into that meaningful line of work. And, you know, one of the things that can drag us away from that, or just, you know, slowly whittle us down, is evil. A lot of times when we think about evil, we think about like the cartoonish cosmic battle between the forces of evil and the forces of good. But you were driving home yesterday that there's really a banality to evil, meaning that we think of evil as this large cosmic force, but a lot of ways it works itself into our lives through pettiness, through backbiting, through just sheer weariness. And in the face of that, we ask for God's grace, but part of our calling sometimes is just to stand and stay put and say, I'm not going to let the pettiness drive me away from this incarnate work that God's called me to.
I think that's important to think about, really, in any ministry, but particularly one as fulfilling with its challenges like the healthcare ministry. And, you know, we have a lot of students, former students of ours. We see them on Facebook, and they're, you know, fighting the daily struggle. And sometimes you just want to, like, tell them, is like, you know what, every day you're just there is the day you're there and not someone who's worse, or that no one is there, and that many ways the victory is just, you know, the fortitude and patience you have. But even if you're just, man, you know, even if you go help people for a year or a day in whatever ministry God asks you to be, you know, folks, that's a day or a year difference. I mean, I think we want to hold up the people who, you know, worked in the industry forever. I think Rhonda Heim, I don't know if she's listening, Rhonda Heim, she should have a statue put up in front of St. Augustine's. I'm just throwing that out there. Deacon Heim, he's great too. But Rhonda, I mean, she's awesome. Everybody knows her. She's fantastic. So we want to really, like, laud people who fought the good fight and did it for decades. But even if it's just a little bit, folks, know that even that little bit is something that Jesus calls for all of us. So even if you don't think that you're in it for, you know, the 60-year battle, maybe all you Christ wants you for is 6 minutes.
Yeah. You think about the traditional, the corporal works of mercy, and one of them is burying the dead. We were talking to a student yesterday who said she worked for a time just bathing the bodies of patients who had recently died, and I can't imagine. That's got to be immensely trying sometimes. But the letters that she got from families were just astounding. And the impact, you know, like, I think sometimes as men we think about, like, I want to write the next great book, or I want to conquer the next great board game.
Right.
But you think about the eternal impact that something like that has, the grace that you can show a family during one of the most difficult times of life. It's really awe-inspiring.
And I think sometimes we need to realize, well, we do this too when we actually make our appeal to Iowa Catholic Radio listeners about being a part. I know that that sounds like maybe some really neat, marketing campaign that I came up with. But I don't do marketing campaigns. The only one, I accidentally am contributing to the pumpkin spice latte business by making fun of John Leonetti so much. But when it comes to marketing, Bonners don't know how to make money. We're Irish and Oklahoman. So I'm being honest. What I like about throwing this out, folks, is if you want to be a part of Iowa Catholic Radio's ministry, you might not be a blabbermouth like I am. But if you contribute by donating, you really do become part of the ministry. Healthcare is like this too. Healthcare is a communal effort, especially if we think about it in terms of the church, especially when we think about it in terms of a local one, like Mercy Medical. And you can be a part of that in various ways without being employed or even volunteering. Mm-hmm. It depends on how you see those things. So whether it's Iowa Catholic Radio, like we said, we're a nonprofit, we're supported exactly by people being willing to donate, whether it's Mercy Medical, Mercy College of Health Sciences, all these things that we do here in Des Moines, you can truly be a part of that ministry even if you're not employed, get a check, wear the colored shirt, etc.
I think we've mentioned pumpkin spice lattes 5 episodes in a row now. Yeah. You know the week where the radio station had the we were doing the team up with I'm blanking on the sandwich shop, but each show had a special sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we need to find a coffee shop that will have like the John Leonetti pumpkin spice latte.
And then come up with like different spices for everybody else's
show. And it comes with a free pastry. I don't know what the Leonetti pastry would be.
Oh, wow. That's good. Is there Italian pastries?
Okay. But if you can't support financially, we do cover your prayers as well. I love the fact that the rosary leads into our show now. 5 a.m. each morning, there's Bible in a Year. That's followed by the rosary as well. So any way you can connect yourself and sort of push the cart together with us here at Iowa Catholic Radio, whether that's through prayer, through diving into sacred scripture, or through a donation of your funds, we are certainly grateful for your co-ministry.
Also, through this 223-1150, like texting into us, half the time, Bud and I don't even have any notes. So, if you're going to text in, that's like basically writing the show for us.
As aging, portly men, you don't know how much we crave. Like, whenever the radio station gets a message about the show, my wife's like, "You're acting like it's Christmas morning." I'm just like, "Oh, someone
said, listened.
Someone complimented the show.
Back off."
Just kind of hug my iPod.
Thank you, iPod. Well, on that note, it's time to put another hour of this show to bed. This is the Uncommon Good, folks, of Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, our cities, our state, entire nation of the world. This has been the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. See you next week. I said I'd seen the killing and could identify the feeling. Shot a man beneath the town hall floor.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.